This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 153 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. As I said last week, when I approach my fantasy football drafts, I'm open to drafting a variety of players, because I know I'm going to be wrong a lot, and because I know plenty of players are fantasy relevant, there's just no need to be locked into 8 or 9 guys that I absolutely, positively have to select in each draft. There are players that I see as values given their average draft position, but I still draft players who I think are just fairly priced. Really, instead of thinking about who you want to target in each draft, I think the most important thing to note when you're drafting are the handful of players that you might avoid. Every player is worthwhile at some cost, but we know that most players are drafted around their ADP, and as a result, we can pinpoint guys that we want to avoid. I've got a list of players to avoid that I want to talk through on today's show, but before doing so, I wanted to remind you guys about NumberFire Premium. With NumberFire's customizable draft kit, you can just enter your league settings and get a custom draft board tailored to you. Plus, with NumberFire Premium, you get risk profiles, auction values, tier sheets, expert rankings, and so much more. That doesn't even include NumberFire's award-winning DFS tools, gambling picks, and premium content that also come with NumberFire Premium. First-time users can use promo code CHAMPION at checkout and get their first month of premium for just $9.99. That's promo code CHAMPION. Visit numberfire.com/premium for more details. I feel like I have to preface this entire podcast by saying that just because I'm mostly avoiding these players doesn't mean I think that they're bad players. I actually think a lot of these players are good on this list. It's just that fantasy football isn't real football. And we know that because quarterbacks don't really matter in fantasy football, but they sure do in real football. And that's just one of the reasons I'm not into Carson Wentz this year. Value at the quarterback position comes later in drafts, so Wentz's 7th round ADP is inherently not super worthwhile. But there's plenty of reason to be down on Wentz, at least down on Wentz versus how he performed in 2017. The first reason is obvious, and it's that Wentz is coming back from an ACL tear. I'm not overly concerned about his week one availability, but it's something that could get in the way of performance nonetheless. The more important thing to note about Wentz is his touchdown rate from last year and how unsustainable that touchdown rate was. On 440 attempts, Wentz threw 33 touchdowns last season. That was good for a 7.5% touchdown rate. For reference, the league's average touchdown rate last season was 4.2%. So Wentz threw a touchdown on 7.5% of his passes, while the league was throwing one on 4.2% of theirs. Okay, well, Carson Wentz is good. That's true, but he's not that good, because no quarterback is that good to sustain such a touchdown rate year over year over year. Since the turn of the century, there have been 19 instances where a quarterback had 200 or more attempts while hitting a 7% touchdown rate. Of those 19 instances, we've seen 16 with next season data. And of those 16, none of them had an increase in touchdown rate the following year, while the average decrease was 2.7%. I don't expect Wentz to be some ordinary fantasy asset at quarterback next season, but I do think his QB6 price tag is really unnecessary. There will be passing touchdown regression, and he's coming off a big injury. At a position that's replaceable in fantasy football, it's just not worth it, even if he has an MVP-like ceiling. I've talked about LeSean McCoy a bit over the last month and how I'm not digging him this year as much as the consensus is. His current ADP on fantasyfootballcalculator.com is RB16, and I've got him at RB17, so the running back rankings aren't that far off. But his ADP is also at the 4th pick in the 3rd round over there, ahead of both Vikings wide receivers. So I don't mind the running back ranking, but I do mind the overall ranking. And it's for a handful of reasons. The first is that the Bills' offense is more than likely not going to be very good this year. Even if Josh Allen starts and he pans out, you still got to be a little bit worried about how much they can move the ball with the weapons that Josh Allen has. NumberFire's projections have them as a bottom-tiered offense this year, and my own projections actually have them scoring the fewest touchdowns in 2018. And as I said on last week's mailbag show, being in positive game scripts and being on winning teams as a running back matters. Over the last 5 seasons, NFL offenses have averaged 36.9 touchdowns per year. But of the top 50 running back seasons in fantasy football during this time, the average number of touchdowns scored on those running backs' respective offenses has been 42.1. So we're looking basically at top 10 running backs each year and seeing that those running backs are in offenses that score on average 6 more touchdowns across a season than a league average offense. Meanwhile, only 38% of the 50 running backs played in an offense that had fewer than 40 touchdowns, 22% were in offenses with fewer than the league-wide average of roughly 37, and just 4% were in an offense with fewer than 30 touchdowns. One of those two running backs that makes up that 4% was actually LeSean McCoy in 2017. So this isn't necessarily a death sentence, it just means that it's going to be more difficult for McCoy to have a big ceiling given the offense that he's playing in. And that offense also has a pretty bad offensive line. They lost a lot of pieces this offseason, and NumberFire's offensive line guru, Jim Sonnis, actually has them entering the year with the second worst line in football. And then there's also McCoy's schedule, which sucks to start the year. And that matters for your own team's valuation as you move forward during the season. Like, if you draft LeSean McCoy in the third round and he puts up low-end RB2 numbers across the first half of the season, not only are you going to start doubting LeSean McCoy, but you've all of a sudden got a fifth or sixth round player at the cost of a third rounder. The Bills open up the season against the Ravens, then the Chargers, and then the Vikings. Good luck with that. But then they'll still see probable negative game scripts in their next three games versus Green Bay, Tennessee, and Houston. Those are 6 games to open the year where LeSean McCoy could legitimately struggle. At the very least, he should struggle across the first 3 games. And this is all on top of the off-the-field issues for LeSean McCoy. I'm not saying he's going to be suspended this year, but that does come with some risk. I get that he's going to see a ton of volume, and that's what makes fading him such a difficult thing to do. But given all of this evidence, I just see McCoy as someone who may be super frustrating to own this year. And if you're drafting him over high-ceiling players like Stephon Diggs, you might regret it. Last season, all of Tyreek Hill's touchdowns were 30 or more yards. All 7 of them. And all the while, he saw only 4 red zone targets. I went back and looked at every wide receiver season over the last 7 years, so since 2011, just to see how Tyreek Hill's touchdowns scored per red zone target rate looked. And unsurprisingly, among relevant wideouts, his 1.75 rate was one of the highest that we've ever seen. Only 4 wide receivers had a higher touchdown per red zone target rate over the last 7 years. And all but one of those players, along with a few more who had close to Hill's rate, ended up scoring fewer touchdowns the following year. And it's kind of obvious as to why. If you're scoring a lot of touchdowns without seeing a lot of red zone looks, it's because you're making big plays. And if you're making big plays, that's volatile. But that's also the point with Tyreek Hill. In order for Tyreek Hill to live up to his ADP, he's going to have to be used differently in the Chiefs' offense this season. Maybe that happens, but it might be tough with Sammy Watkins now in the mix, who scored 7 touchdowns on 10 red zone targets last year with LA. Watkins actually led the Rams receivers in red zone scores a year ago, despite only seeing about 13% of the team's targets. And while Pat Mahomes is the right quarterback for Tyreek Hill given his big arm, we shouldn't assume that Mahomes can do what Alex Smith did last year. Among quarterbacks with 200 or more attempts, Alex Smith was 4th in completion percentage on 15 plus air yard throws, 1st in percentage of yards coming on those throws, and 2nd in deep ball touchdowns. And it wasn't like he was just efficient. He finished 12th in percentage of attempts that traveled 15 or more air yards. I do think Tyreek Hill can still see more volume this year than he did last year, even with the addition of Sammy Watkins. The Chiefs might end up throwing the ball more, and Hill didn't play all 16 games last year. But you're fooling yourself if you think that he's a safe option. He's got a super wide range of outcomes, and that to me isn't worth it with a third round pick. If you listened to the Tight End Strategy podcast last month, then you know that my approach to the position is to get someone like Rob Gronkowski or just wait. Don't get middle round tight ends because they generally don't produce any better than the tight end 11 or the tight end 12. That alone makes Greg Olsen kind of a questionable fifth round selection. But my goodness, you guys, so does his recent history. Olsen was off the injury report for just 6 of his regular season games last year, but even still, the dude had fewer than 200 receiving yards last year. And 116 of those yards came in a single game. He averaged like 33 yards per game, you guys. He finished the season with a yards per route run rate, which is courtesy of Pro Football Focus, of 1.06, which was by far his worst rate in recent memory. He had a 1.95 rate in 2016 and a 2.17 rate in 2015. That downward trend is really concerning for a player who's getting up there in age. He's also only scored just 1 touchdown over his last 15 regular season games. Since that second touchdown happened, which was back in week 9 of 2016, Olsen has averaged a 1.37 yards per route run rate. During the first 8 weeks of the 2016 season, that number was 2.27. maybe this isn't that big of a deal and maybe this is all just simple variance. But I think at the very least, you've got to be concerned about his new competition for targets. Since Olsen's been in Carolina, there just hasn't been much to compete with when it comes to targets. But this year, you not only have a pass-catching running back in Christian McCaffrey and a wideout who saw a 22% target share last year in Devin Funchess, but Carolina just spent a first rounder on DJ Moore. I think those three things make Greg Olsen someone to avoid this year. He plays a onesie position, he's seen a decrease in efficiency and effectiveness over the last year and a half, and the Panthers have a lot of weapons in that offense. The most difficult player for me to project this season is hands down Kenyon Drake. Drake actually might be very good at football. Of the backs with 100 or more carries last year, only Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara had a larger difference in yards per carry versus their running back teammates' yards per carry. But the problem with him from a fantasy perspective is that the sample size of him being this elite runner is really small, the Dolphins' offense is probably going to be pretty bad, and there's always a chance that the team runs with a committee instead of simply featuring Kenyon Drake. Basically, the way that I feel about Kenyon Drake is the way I feel anytime someone locks Widowmaker on my team in a game of Overwatch. It's either going to really work out, or you're absolutely screwed. I apologize for my nerdy analogy, let's move on. Regarding sample size, I don't even just mean Drake in the NFL. He has just 166 carries at the NFL level, but in college, he carried the rock only 233 times. I understand that he played behind Derrick Henry at Alabama, but collegiate volume share is still a decent indicator of future NFL success, so he's got that going against him. But like I said, even if he's good, I don't love the situation. Miami running backs as a group last year scored the second fewest fantasy points in the league, and the Dolphins ran only 6 goal line rushing plays all season long. They had the highest pass to run ratio at the goal line last year. 2 years ago in Adam Gase's first year, at the goal line, they had one of the lowest pass to rush ratios. So maybe there's a sample size problem here, but it's scary knowing that Gase was cool with such an absurd pass to run rate close to the end zone last year. But the real problem I have with the Dolphins offense and play calling is just sheer volume of plays being run. Miami's only run 48 goal line plays since Gase took over, which is last in the NFL, and they've run the second fewest offensive plays over the last 2 years. And there could be somewhat of a committee in Miami this year as well. I don't think an aged Frank Gore or a player like Kalen Ballage, who didn't even lead his college backfield in touches, are serious threats, but I do fear that the coaches won't see it that way. Remember guys, Kenyon Drake didn't take over that backfield when Jay Ajayi was traded last year. Damian Williams was involved in that offense. And Kalen Ballage is a good pass catcher, while Frank Gore can handle some early down work. So there's a chance that they dig into Kenyon Drake's workload. So with Drake, if he were in a better offense, I think that I'd feel differently about him entering 2018. But the offensive situation, along with the potential for a committee and the small sample that we have on him, scares the living you-know-what out of me. I'd just rather play it safe that early in fantasy drafts. One of my favorite players in the entire NFL is Marvin Jones. I just don't think that he gets the respect that he deserves. But with that being said, I'm not very into him at his ADP this year. Jones scored 9 times last year, but based on how many touchdowns players have scored over the last 7 years with Jones' receiving yardage total, we should have expected him to score 6 or 7 times. A big reason for Jones' output last year was his deep ball ability. He's good at making contested catches down the field, but he ranked 4th in deep ball touchdowns, 3rd in percentage of yards coming on deep ball throws, and 6th in deep ball catch rate. All of those were career highs for Marvin Jones. It's not going to be that easy for him to just repeat that type of performance. What's probably more important for Jones this year, though, is Kenny Golladay being healthy. Last year, Jones played 11 games with Babytron and 5 without him. In those 11 games, Jones averaged 5.3 targets, 3.1 receptions, 61.3 yards, and 0.54 touchdowns per game. That was good for a PPR points per game average of about 12.5 or lower end wide receiver 2 numbers. Without Golladay, Jones averaged 4.5 more targets per game, 2.3 more receptions, over 24 more yards, and 0.06 more touchdowns. Jones was scoring 5 more PPR points per game when Kenny Golladay was sidelined last year. There's no Eric Ebron anymore, and some of his volume will probably go to the team's wideouts. But that doesn't make Marvin Jones risk-free. The presence of Kenny Golladay could sincerely make Jones more of a wide receiver 3 or 4 this year when he's being drafted close to wide receiver 2 territory. I'm a little surprised that Carlos Hyde has an ADP that's higher than both Duke Johnson and Nick Chubb. I mean, I understand that he signed a decent deal with Cleveland this offseason, and he showed us last year that he can handle a big workload as he was one of 6 backs with a 55% rushing share and a 10% target share. But I'm not sure Carlos Hyde is this special player. He had a 35.8% success rate last year, which measures the percentage of positive runs determined by Number Fire's expected points model, which was far lower than teammate Matt Breida's near 44% rate. And Hyde also had a yards per carry average that was 0.54 yards lower than his running back teammate's rate. It was actually the seventh worst difference among all 100-plus attempt backs last year. I mean, let's face it, the Browns had Carlos Hyde, and they still went out and drafted Nick Chubb with an early second-round pick in the draft. So not only will Chubb dig into Hyde's workload, but Duke Johnson is there, and Duke Johnson has more receptions than any other running back in the NFL since he entered the league. I guess the bottom line with Hyde is that I just don't see the ceiling. I don't see the upside. I'd rather pay a lower cost for one of the other Browns backs like Nick Chubb or Duke Johnson. Chubb has the ambiguity factor on his side, and Johnson could just catch a lot of passes. I'd rather have that on my team. I'm not into Deshaun Watson for a lot of the same reasons that I'm not into Carson Wentz. Except with Deshaun Watson, it's a little bit more extreme. Last year, Watson threw a touchdown on 9.31% of his attempts. Only two quarterbacks have done that in NFL history on 200 or more attempts. And last year, Watson converted 13 of his 27 red zone attempts into touchdowns. That was the highest rate that we've seen in recent history in the red zone among relevant quarterbacks. Over 38% of his passing yards came on deep balls, which was second most in the league. And almost 26% of his passes were deep balls, which was the most in the league. And according to Mike Clay of ESPN, only 1% of his passes were dropped last season, which was the lowest rate among quarterbacks. There are just so many numbers suggesting a fall back to earth for Deshaun Watson this year. I do recognize that he has insane upside, though, given his rushing ability. That's why I'm still ranking him as a top 5 quarterback this year. But at his ADP, where all of this regression is just not being fully recognized, you can pass. I'm projecting Marlon Mack to lead the Colts in volume this season, but I also recognize that a lot of things can go south for Mack in 2018. He really wasn't great last year. Among the 72 backs with 50 or more carries last year, only Mike Davis saw a higher percentage of his carries go for zero or fewer yards than Marlon Mack did. Now, Mack did battle a shoulder injury, but that's still a little scary. As is the fact that Frank Gore outperformed him in plenty of categories last year, including success rate as well as the percentage of carries that went for zero or fewer or two or fewer yards. Mack is now battling a hamstring injury, allowing rookie backs Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins to get a little bit of more run in the preseason. Both of those backs didn't have high draft costs, so maybe you're not that concerned about Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins. But neither did Marlon Mack. It's not like Marlon Mack was a second-round pick last year. The Colts got him in the fourth round with a compensatory pick. There have been lots of reports out of Indianapolis that we should see a committee this year in that backfield, and I'm buying into that with Marlon Mack being the favorite to lead that team in volume, like I said earlier. But given cost, I'd rather invest in Nyheim Hines or Jordan Wilkins, since the chance of one of them outperforming Mack isn't all that low. I did an article and a podcast this offseason on running backs who performed like studs in college, and in it, I said the following about Ronald Jones. Ronald Jones has had some of the best success on the ground in this class, and he'll more than likely be an early-ish round pick in this year's draft. But he only caught 14 passes last year, tallying just 32 in his 3 seasons at Southern California. His 4.21% reception share in 2017 is one of the lowest in the class, and while that's no death sentence, it should be noted that none of the backs in the NFL sample had that poor of a mark during their final collegiate seasons. When I tell you that Jones is evidently struggling as a pass protector and pass catcher in training camp, I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I'm saying it because college production matters, and college production can at least give us a glimpse as to what players can and can't do. Back in March and April when I was doing this prospecting work, some listeners did note that Ronald Jones just wasn't utilized enough as a pass catching running back. Okay, that's fine, but that still doesn't tell us confidently that Jones can be a pass catcher. He may fit this Jamal Charles-like mold given his size and speed, but if he can't pass catch, that's going to ruin his fantasy football value. Peyton Barber ended up starting in Tampa Bay's first preseason game, and I absolutely expect Peyton Barber to see a lot of work to start the year in that offense. I think the Bucs are going to split that backfield up. But then I'm also really concerned about the team's first 3 weeks where they'll face the Saints, Eagles, and Steelers. Those are 3 Super Bowl contenders, and even if the Bucs had Jameis Winston, they would probably struggle to compete in those games. So if they see negative game scripts over those first 3 games, Ronald Jones won't be on the field much given his lack of pass protection and pass catching ability that he's shown thus far. I just think Jones projects to be a player who might emerge late in the season if he does at all. And that's not the type of fantasy asset that I want on my roster. So if you guys didn't know, the 10 players that I just highlighted were actually all in an article that I wrote on NumberFire last week. I wanted to provide context for why I'm avoiding those particular players, but I also think it's worthwhile to let you guys know about a player who I didn't write up, but was about to. So it's another player that I'm more than likely going to avoid this year. And that's Brandon Cooks. It really just comes down to the fact that I worry about the potential for flat target distribution in LA. And we know they want to be a fairly run-heavy, balanced team. Cooks has never seen a large target share in his offenses over the years. He's actually never seen a target share north of 20%. So if that type of trend continues in an offense that doesn't throw the ball a lot, I'm fearful as to how much volume he'll actually see. I'd just rather target Cooper Kupp or Bobby Woods a few rounds later than getting Brandon Cooks at the 4-5 turn. But that'll be it for today's Players to Avoid show. Thanks again for listening, you guys. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. If you've got a question for this week's mailbag show that will drop on Friday, hit me up via Twitter at LateRoundQB or email me at JJ@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you then.